Dear listeners, this podcast is created by the Linguistov team.
If you want to practice and improve your English in a fun and creative way, please visit our website www.linguistov.ru.
And if you want to share your opinion and ideas regarding our discussions, you can email us at info@linguistov.ru.
I woke up at 2 a.m.
So just say, I woke up yesterday.
Basically, yes.
Daniel?
I cannot be anything else but fine. Mm-hmm. Just today, I turned 21, and so many people wished me so many things that I just cannot feel anyhow else but splendid.
Well, anyway, I think that today we have a Daniel special. Because, as you said, there is no other news in the neighborhood today than the news that it is your birthday. Well, actually, it was your birthday yesterday. So, what do we know about this most enigmatic member of Linguistov team? He's a writer, he's the honored professor of beardology, and he knows a thing or two about international relations. But, in reality, he is not who he seems to be. Today, exclusively, we reveal some less well-known facts about Daniel.
Wow. Are they known to me?
I don't know. So, one, he is not 21 years old, as he claims. To say the truth, no one knows his real age. He just turned up one day, like cats do. Then, two, some say he's a Time Lord, and he has a spaceship called Space Cat that rummages through time and space in the best sliders tradition. Actually, it was he who suggested the idea of sliders in the first place, and he even played a cameo there. Watch season 3, episode 1, on the 15th minute. It's all there. Then, 3, he can roll his eyes because he's part zombie. He's got zombie genes that, if not contained, can trigger the zombie apocalypse. Then, 4, he says he lives in Petrozavodsk, but does he? We never had the action.
Nobody ever checked.
We never had the actual evidence of this fact. All because, in reality, every week he speaks to us from his dungeon in Romania, where he keeps the last living vampire hostage for some weird experiments. Then, 5, similar to what Americans say about ginger people, Daniel stores the souls of his victims in his beard. 6, Daniel speaks all the existing languages in the world and parallel universes. He also played an important part in the development of the English language. Once, though, he had a beer or two with Shakespeare himself, criticizing his ridiculously tiny beard, and, being in a heightened mood, decided to add conditionals to the language. He said, if you had an awesome beard like mine, you would not suck in prose, mate. So now you know who to blame. 7, he is immortal. 8, he can break a brick wall with one hand, but chooses not to because that would be too flashy. Then 9, the entire animal world obeys him, except for cats, obviously. And the last one, 10, he knows the meaning of life.
Oh. 11, I am responsible for voices.
Oh, yes, yes, 11, he's responsible for voices.
He is the door to parallel reality.
Exactly.
Okay, Daniel, let's talk about some unknown facts about you. Landish, do you remember in the beginning of, in the first or in the second episode of our podcast, we had a mutual interview, right?
Yeah, yes.
So what do you think about a spontaneous interview today?
Yeah, sure. But I have a small...
I presume you're not going to ask how I feel about it.
No.
How do you feel about it?
I don't think I have a choice.
I am absolutely positive.
So, what is your first recollection of your childhood? You have to answer really quickly. You can't think.
Mm-hmm. Okay. It is one of my first recollections, but let it be the first one for this interview. I am walking past my kindergarten and all my kindergarten mates. They are there behind the fence, playing around and doing something, but not able to cross the fence. And I'm there outside because I was on the sick leave. I felt so superior to them.
So you were not a part of the system.
Just so.
First recollection, I remember when I was still, I think, about 5-6 months old, and I was lying in this baby bouncer, and my sister's friends came over to look at me. I think I was even younger, maybe like 4 months, because I couldn't talk. I was only looking at them. Mm-hmm. They were looking at me and smiling, so maybe even younger. I can't really tell. Maybe I was only 1 month old. Mm-hmm. But the point is, I remember that baby bouncer was blue. Mm-hmm. And then, as I grew older, I asked my mom about that. Like, did we have a blue baby bouncer? And she was like, no, we didn't. Mm-hmm. And I was quite surprised because I had this recollection. And then finally, I asked my sister and she said that, yes, we did. It was not ours. It was borrowed from our neighbors just for a month or so. And then we bought another one. It would be quite surprising for a baby girl to have a blue baby bounce, right?
Yeah. So,
and they borrowed it from the neighbor and then they bought the pink one. But I remember the blue one. So it was only for a couple of days.
Mm-hmm.
So and then I calmed down. It was not a figment of my imagination. Do you remember your first school teacher? Did you like her or not?
Of course, I perfectly remember my first school teacher, and I absolutely liked her. And it was mutual, as far as I remember. The most interesting thing that when 10 years later I came to Petrozavodsk to partake in graduating ceremony for my former classmates. That first teacher, she was there, and it was she who had offered to me to study my last year in Petrozavodsk. Despite the fact that I still grieve about this decision, I call it the worst decision in my life, it doesn't affect our relationship. My first English language teacher was different, of course, and I remember reciting a poem in front of a class.
In English?
Yes, of course, in English. And after that, she patted me on the head.
Oh, that was actually...
that was intimate.
Okay. Did you have a favorite book when you were a little boy?
Mm-hmm. I liked to read fairy tales, of course. After I had read the Russian fairy tales, I transferred to the fairy tales of the northern peoples and of the African peoples. There were even fairy tales of the Philippine Islands. So that was one of my favorite collections. And I cannot remember when I read The Hobbit, but I, of course, can name it one of my favorite books. Mm-hmm. Of my childhood.
When did you start to write?
This is a more complex question than the previous one. I seem to remember my first piece of writing. It dates back to when I was 12 years old. It was my first prose. My first poem was written earlier, but I perceive myself as a prose writer. Yes, and my first piece of prose was something in the fantasy genre, and it was just an imitation of what I had read and I had played recently. The two factors that moved me to write were books and video games.
Who were your first readers?
my parents, of course. But that piece of writing was published in our district paper.
Oh.
This excerpt is stored somewhere. My grandma stores everything. She has stored almost 100 pieces of diplomas and that sort of stuff.
She knows they're going to be expensive one day.
She's a cunning woman.
Yeah, she knows it.
She knows it.
It's a great guess.
So how did your parents react?
Neither my mother nor my grandmother are much into fantasy, so they didn't react in the way I expected them to.
Were you disappointed? Were you frustrated? you could guess that they wouldn't be much impressed.
I just thought I could have done better.
Because, Landish, you remember I told you about my dad, yeah? How he reacted to my first...
Yeah, I remember that.
I did not know that.
I can tell. It was when I was, I guess, about 14 or 15. And that's when my parents bought me a printer. And, you know, at that time it was quite interesting to have a printer. You basically could print anything you want. Anything you wanted. So, I was experimenting with writing. So I wrote a short story. Of course, again, you said about your first experience, mine was also very much influenced by the book that I was reading at that time. But still, it was something new to me. So I was quite pleased with the fact that I have something finished, you know. So I decided to print it and show to my parents. And it was a big decision for me because I wasn't very close with my parents. So I printed it out. I went into the living room and I showed it to my mom. And she was like, what the hell is that? So she put on her glasses and she started reading. And then she's like, she read maybe the first paragraph. And then she's like, I said, that's too complicated. I can't understand what you want to say. And then my dad gets involved and he's like, what's that show? What are you reading? And she's like, you know what? Our daughter is a writer. And my dad is like, what? So he took that printed pieces of paper and he looked through them and he's like, so that's 20 pages, right? And the printer ink. So how much money does it cost, Asya? And I was so disappointed because... It was really a big decision for me to find the courage to at least decide to give them my short story. But they didn't even read it. But they said, and instead they said that it was just a waste of printer ink and paper. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. But, I mean, it's okay. I never really got disappointed, but I was a bit hurt anyway. So,
What's wrong with
I can hear you guys crying. What was your favorite TV show when you were at school?
I didn't watch any TV series while I was at school. I watched TV programs like Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, Jeopardy, the Russian version, of course, and Chto Gdzie Kogda.
Chto, I like this. What's that joke? This TV show is about how three professors want to take the money from a poor retired guy from Ufa.
No, it is about how that poor retired guy from Ufa tries to take money from six professors.
Oh, yeah, tries to take money from six professors, yeah.
That sounds fair.
Yeah.
It is a charity of kind. It's still my favorite TV show, but I haven't watched it for... I cannot remember how many years.
Have you thought of participating in any of reality shows, TV programs of any kind?
Well, speaking of Chto Gdzie Kogda, when I was a little boy, I wanted to send a question, it was a very naive dream because the question, the riddle, was taken from a book, and they would solve that riddle in a second. I can't remember what the riddle was about, but I cannot remember exactly how it goes. It was taken from Harry Potter, book number one.
Have you ever been interested in classic literature?
In school, they tried to get me to love classic literature, but they couldn't. Yeah, because it was Stephen King and the Lord of the Rings and other fantasy writers. I got interested in classic literature all by myself. after school. I still cannot say I'm much into classic literature. I haven't read anything of Leo Tolstoy. I have read only one book of Dostoevsky. Recently I have begun to read, to actually listen to poems of Alexander Pushkin and...
So what triggered it so suddenly to listen to poems?
I just wanted to test my memory, whether I will or will not be able to remember them.
Okay. Do you ever see dreams in English?
Dreams in English? Never. My dreams are almost absolutely soundless.
Okay. What about thoughts? Do you ever think in English or in French? I know you speak French, right?
When I read something in the English language, when I watch films or TV series, I do think in English, but never in my usual life.
What about you, Landish? Do you ever think in English?
Yeah, sure. But never in French, actually. No. Mm-hmm. Well, I don't really speak French that well.
In Qatar, maybe?
Oh, yeah, sure! My first language.
Well, since I'm more a Russian writer than an English writer, I cannot but think in Russian.
And you know what I noticed when I only started learning English, and of course my English was not very good at all at that time, but I already could think in English. So I presume the ability to think in English does not depend on your vocabulary, how many words you know. It just depends on the surrounding, if you are placed in this English surrounding or if you are influenced by some movie or book. Mm-hmm. Then you just start thinking in English, even if these thoughts are not very rich in vocabulary. So I think it just depends on the environment.
I adore answering questions. I hate asking them, generally.
So you have to get, you know, some experience, because a couple of years you will be interviewed quite often, so you have to be prepared. So we are practicing.
Listen, I have to practice in asking questions, because
ambitious. Are you going to be a journalist? Something that I don't know?
No, because Landish's birthday draws near.
Oh, goodness.
I shouldn't remind about that.
No, it's all right, but are you going to make a special again with the interview with me? Please don't make an interview with me.
Why not? I thought we are getting better.
I doubt it. Haven't I already answered all possible questions?
Oh, no. There are so many of them. Besides, there's some time passed, so maybe something happened.
No. How did the birthday go? So, yeah. How was it?
Get many presents?
No, it didn't go in any way. It was just like a usual day for me. There were congratulations, of course, almost 3/10 of them. But, well, nothing special, nothing else special did happen.
Was a cake involved?
Of course there wasn't. It isn't an anniversary. 21 is more like a winning combination in blackjack.
There's a song by Garbage, I think. 21 is not a good number, something like that.
That's so good of you to mention it.
Sorry. But she sang it in the past, was not a good number, so maybe it is a good number.
On the 2nd of August, I am going to commemorate this glorious day with my former classmates, as we still gather from time to time.
Because, party?
Of course we are. There's going to be beer, hookah, so yes.
Do you like celebrating your birthdays?
I really don't, but it's okay. I understand that some people expect it from me.
Mm-hmm.
So from year to year, I am ready to spend some money on I want a party just to please my friends. But unfortunately, as you get older, this day starts reminding you about it, about that. And that's why you just get a bit melancholic.
It reminds you of what?
of your age.
It's a memento mori.
Oh, yeah. The inevitable chasm of death.
It's not even about that. It's okay. About the fact that you are not a child anymore, or something like that. So, but I usually get rid of the streams with a couple of shots.
It's a proven method.
Yeah, and start enjoying this day. Karaoke bar.
Karaoke bar. Yeah.
Karaoke bar. Daniel, are you with us?
We're going to sing trashy Russian songs.
I'm not going to tell him our repertoire, but it is going to come as a surprise.
I'm just trying to prepare him.
Russian chanson.
Yeah.
A chanson, a song after which people shun you.
Right.
How do you write it?
Are you asking me or Daniel?
Both.
Okay, Daniel.
Should we start simultaneously?
Yeah.
How do I write? Before I commence writing, there is not an idea, maybe an image, a situation. What Stephen King calls a situation in my head. For example, my latest story, which I'm going to be finishing by the end of this week maybe, came from a situation of a man who doesn't sleep small hours. And the question I ask is, why are they called small hours? Yes, and from this situation and question, a plot develops.
How do you usually come up with ideas?
Idea is something big. I do not call them ideas. I call them questions, situations, images. Which pop in my head suddenly. You cannot prepare yourself to it either. And when the story is over, when it's written and rewritten, you come up with an idea for it. If it does have a potential for some idea, for some meaning. Stories like Jesse are just stories. But some have some message, I would call it.
And what about the background? I usually don't have any problems with the ideas, but I do have problems with describing the surrounding, the people who are not the central characters, everything that creates the atmosphere of this particular story. Do you? How do you come up with the surroundings? Do you do some pre-reading, for example, if you decide to place your character in China? Do you read about China, about the city where you, or is it always imaginary?
Well, I've never placed a character in China.
Well, it's just an example.
Yeah,
do you do any research which would help you be more objective, maybe?
Sometimes research is helpful. There was one story for which I had done research, the story about a photographer in a black-white world. For that, I had read a history of the invention of photography.
Mm-hmm. Did you use it in the book, in the short story?
Yes, of course I did. Some details of procedures of making a photograph and some names they leaked into a story. Mm-hmm. All names in this story are the names of real people, just they are sort of mixed. The first photographer's name is Joseph Nisifor. And in my story, Joseph and Nisifor are two different persons.
Mm-hmm.
The first sentence, is it difficult?
No, absolutely not. It is much more difficult to finish a story than to begin it.
Mm-hmm. What about the title?
Sorry, I'll interrupt you. I remember when we had that Finish Me story competition, and Landis told me that you sent her the story, and then as a second message, sorry, I forgot the title.
Well, it must be very important then.
And she told me about that. She said, well, it must be very important for him.
Yes, sometimes I forget about it, and sometimes I know from the very beginning how a story is going to be titled. But as a rule, it comes in the process of writing.
Do you think that it is important for, title? Is it important?
Of course it is. It draws attention.
Yeah, but I don't know. Maybe it's different with paintings, because I never title my paintings. I have this online portfolio, and it was such a pain in the neck to name the paintings, the drawings, because I never named them. I like, you know, the Rothko. He just had untitled one, untitled two, untitled three, etc. So yeah, oh. I'm kind of a person.
Maybe it's laziness.
Maybe.
Everything has a name. Look at science. Every species on Earth, every planet, or every type of planet has its name. Everything should have its name.
Maybe it's different with art.
Maybe art has more to do with vision, with some visual impressions. They cannot be easily put into words. Maybe it's a bit different. That's the reason why.
I agree with you, but I also think that if you give a title to especially an abstract painting, it
brings some responsibility.
It not only responsibility, but it also makes a person interpret it based on that title. Mm-hmm. So he doesn't have the liberty to interpret it the way he wants to interpret it. The case of the lost sausage. Part one. She had a dog, but sometimes she wondered whether it was the dog that had her. Black, with a black nose, black eyes, black paws, and black ears. Black as night, black as pitch, black as ink, as soot, and as hell. Although there was nothing hellish about her behavior or lifestyle. A perfectly normal, well-natured dog that liked to eat, sleep, and run around joyfully and with no particular purpose. But the thing was that it was the only dog that solved crimes. Lola, the crime fighter, was a PI with all the necessary credentials. When you saw this couple on the crime scene, you might think it's simply an officer with a dog. Nothing odd here. But it was Lola who was the Sherlock, and Asya as her Dr. Watson. A sidekick, an accessory, but mostly a medium to the world of stupid people. They communicated on some profound level. I am sure Lola could speak and write, but why would anyone reveal it? Provided that in this case, they would definitely pester her with questions, telephone calls, and general human talk to her death. The small talk being the worst kind. She wanted to be left alone with her thoughts and occasionally speak with Asya, as they did, on some profound level. You'd wonder how it happened so that the existence of this unique animal was never widely reported and broadcast all over the planet Earth, with all the bothersome consequences in the end. But it was part of the initial deal. One word, and Lola was out of the game.
Wow.
And the police was not in the position to argue, given the crime situation on the streets. And New York was known for its crime situation. It was a sort of a landmark on its own, like Statue of Liberty or Times Square. It was a strange place for a man to be born to, and a risky place to stay afterwards. Lola liked it. It was everything she could want in a place. Vast streets suddenly turning into tiny dark ones, constant movement of crowds with evil lurking in between, inscrutable unpredictability, and last but not least, the smells. The smells of pizza, urine, rats, people, the smell of crime. She was Dexter of her own field, the creature who was able to recreate the crime by smells alone. And common sense, actually. Something so many people lack, to be honest. That night, Asya was awakened by the shrill of her phone. Lola was sitting on the windowsill, contemplating the nice city scenery. Hello, Asya croaked into the phone receiver. Copy that. We'll be there in 15 minutes. To be continued.
Wow. I even know the end of the story.
No, don't tell.
They left the city of New York and went to Russia. And nobody knows where they are. Nobody will ever know. Oh, fantastic. I'm very much intrigued.
A promising beginning, anyways.
The case of a lost sausage.
Yeah.
So there's going to be a crime with a sausage.
The sausage is going to rot by the end of the story?
Don't know, but there will be a sausage found on the crime scene.
You'll see.
Let us speculate.
Yeah. But I'm not going to tell you.
Okay.
Well, because I don't know yet. But yeah.
Oh really? So when you when you start writing, do you know the plot or do you just write spontaneously and the story writes itself?
You are speaking to me as if I'm an accomplished writer or as if I have written something already.
But
I
you did.
Don't normally write.
But you do have several.
I normally when I have to write, it was with Kim Jong Un. It was just, I had to write it, so I had to come up with a paragraph very quickly, and somehow it turned into a story. You're supposed to make a plan, some kind of, write it on a paper.
I think it's very individual, I think. I don't think that all writers make a, I don't make a plan. But
I have never made a plan.
So we do have good news. The first news is about bearded community. Yeah.
Yeah.
would you tell about this?
Yeah, I just I somehow contacted people who have certain shops or they sell and advertise some products for facial hair. They have a certain cult of beard, so it was quite an honor for me to find out that they liked our story about a bearded man in a beardless world sometime in August. I hope to conduct an interview with one or two of their representatives, and it will be an interview dedicated to a beard.
Well, of course.
Everything that they know and can tell us about beards.
I was quite happy a couple of days ago to establish the contact with one of the most popular groups in VKE.com, which is Dude. How do you translate it? Yeah, if I translate the title of this group into English. And they started posting our doodles with a link leading to our group in VK. And we are quite happy about it because they do have a lot of followers. So hopefully we will get more people following us. And
mm-hmm. Maybe they will start listening to this podcast. And we'll emails. Email section.
I'm even more pleased with the fact that they finally understood that we are who we are. I sent them this post, this news about 3 months ago, and they did not react to my message. And then 3 months later, they published it. Mm-hmm. And I just think that I'm just pleased to know that they finally looked at it and thought it over, and then, wow. They are doing great stuff. Probably we should publish that. So that's how I imagine it. And that's why I'm quite pleased. And we don't spend any money. And that's part of our philosophy, right? So that's what makes me happy, actually.
Thank you, dude.
Thank you, dude. Yeah. So what else? And Landish is coming to St. Petersburg. And Daniel is coming to St. Petersburg as well.
So next week, I guess, we're going to be three of us.
Reunited.
Yeah.
Some more great pictures and more great stuff. The weather in St. Petersburg is very sunny. It's very hot.
It's great.
Yes. Hopefully this kind of weather remains till next week and even longer.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Oh, all right.
It was nice talking to you. I'm talkative today, am I not?
It's great. It actually is. It's very nice. We enjoy it a lot.
I didn't have any lessons today, so I didn't I didn't talk enough today, so that's why I'm talkative.
Okay, we're happy. We're happy that we provided you with a certain outlet for your for your need to talk.
Lots of books and discussions at www.lingvistov.ru.